Hey, welcome to another episode of Dying to Listen podcast presented by the Disc Golf Dyers Guild. So today we have Paul from Monkey Grip Dyes. Get ready to go on a trip and learn some awesome stuff. So thank you, Paul, for taking time out of your day to be on here. We'll jump right in. And what got you started into disc golf?
Disc golf, it's a long story. I've been playing since about 2012, but let me say thank you, Dave, for having me on. It's I'm glad to be here and hope to share, you know, share a little bit of knowledge for some people. So, but I used to have a job where I've traveled, and we would be out of town for like a month or two at a time, and we'd work all different kinds of shifts, you know, first, second, third shifts. But there was a guy that kept saying, "Hey, man, after work, let's go play some disc golf." I'm like, "Nah, I don't think so. That ain't for me." He's like, "No, come on, let's go play disc golf." I'm like, "Disco? I mean, I ain't gonna go dance." But so he finally convinced me, and I mean, after that first day, boom! I mean, I was hooked. I was hooked.
Have you played continuously since 2012?
Yeah, pretty much. I had a little accident at work back in October, so hadn't really thrown much since then. Tried a league, it didn't work out too well. So gonna have to have a little more physical therapy and time, I think, before I can start chucking again.
Yeah. So what happened with that accident?
I got smushed. I was trying to dump a roll off container, and a tractor trailer came in and jacked his trailer over into me and pinned me between his trailer and up against that truck. And I got banged up pretty good. So a little surgery and you know, a little healing time, and I'm back to work, but I'm not back to disc golf yet.
Oh geez, that is crazy. Yeah, glad you're still here.
Appreciate it, man. Me too. So are them kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not fully healed yet to play golf, disc golf?
No, I can't make a grip. That's all I got. So I think with a little more time, physical therapy, though, hopefully I'll get back to it. And if that was not, your learn left-handed or something.
I was going to say, well, you know, it's not a bad thing to learn left-handed, but yeah, you're obviously right-hand dominant. Do you typically throw backhand or forehand?
Backhand predominantly. I mean, except for upshots. Upshots is the only thing. I don't trust my forehands over about 150. So.
Well, I hope you can get back in the saddle sooner rather than later. But what got you into disc dyeing?
I don't know. It's weird because I really don't know. I had seen, I guess probably what it was is I had seen some Brainwaves dyes by Jeff Ash. You know, I started back in 2017, so I don't know what was out, what it was about. You know, I got my information from just a couple people and DG Course Review on dying forums on there. And, I didn't have any YouTube videos, but I joined that Facebook group early. I was like in the, you know, first 500 or so. So I, you know, got to befriend a few people on there, and you know, from that first die, I mean, you know, I was lucky. My first ones turned out okay, you know. Now that fourth and fifth one, not so much. But, you know, those first couple, they got me hooked. I mean, it was just shaving cream dyes, but I mean, they look great. I love the pattern, sold them. So, you know. And then from there, I mean, it just blossomed, you know.
That's awesome. Kind of answered a few questions, like what was your first dye? And you said shaving cream. And you said it turned out.
Yep.
Did you do like a mound or how did you do that?
A mound, yeah. I did a full mound. I used to do a lot of burst, shaving cream burst dyes. Like, you know, I try to post most everything I do. If you go back through my Facebook or Instagram pages, at Monkey Grip Dyes, subscribe, follow, and like.
Yes.
But yeah, I did a lot of shaving cream just with full bursts, and then I kind of did some like Star Wars background with them in the cockpit, and then did like a half burst, and I was like, well, you can kind of, you know, come up with some pretty cool stuff, create some, you know, some good looking stuff. So, I mean, yeah, messed with it all. Played in every medium and, you know.
Yeah, I was taking a look at your stuff today. I was like, boy, you basically did everything.
Yeah, well, I've been doing it a while, so.
Yeah.
I had time.
Yeah. But. I know you kind of mentioned it, but where did you get your information of how to dye discs when you first started?
Like I said, DG Course Review. That was the very first thing I checked out. Mr. Butters on DG Course Review. Send a friend request. But no, I don't get on that much anymore. I think that's kind of outdated. But I did that, and then I got in that that dyers group on Facebook, and Laura Myers was one of the admins at the time. She was one of the ones that started it up, and I don't know, she used to take, you know, little chickadees under her wing every once in a while and kind of tutor them along, you know. So, I mean, she taught me a ton. I mean, a ton. But then, you know, there's a few others. I talked to Tim Perkins, you know, quite a few times. I think we started out kind of close at the same time, and you know, T. Diddy. I don't know. I don't think it was T. Diddy then, but I found him on one of them DG Course forums and chatted with him a little bit. So I had a lot of good upbringing, you know.
Yeah, you definitely got started in the dying and earlier the game, and it's interesting and fascinating to hear, like, how people got their information back in the day. Because, like, nowadays the information is, I think, pretty readily available, and
sick, the amount of stuff that's on YouTube. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, but I mean, shit, I watch all them videos now too. Yeah. I ain't afraid to learn a new trick from anybody.
Yeah, so I have respect for people that started dying when there's literally no information and you're trying to pull hairs, trying to figure shit out. But people nowadays got it super easy.
Yeah, it was a different game then. I remember
right
after the shaving cream dyes, I tried some hair dye, you know, to try to get that brainwave technique that Jeff was getting back then. And, you know, some of those, they didn't turn out so well. But you could just put a shaving cream dye over the top of them, cover them up. Beautiful.
What dye did you use back in the day for, like, the shaving cream mounds?
Well, I'd got some of the synthetic Rit is what I tried, but that stuff wasn't as good. I mean, it's still not as good. But I had some people send me some of the old original Rit, and, you know, that was the shit. I mean, it dyed good. Just about any medium you put it in, it was pretty solid. That and iDye Poly, that's where I started. But I've graduated on up Pro Chem. I guess I've been using Pro Chem for about probably 3 or 4 years now.
Nice. Do you still do the shaving creepers?
I haven't done one in a long time. Like I said, I do those Star Wars ones every once in a while. Mm-hmm. You see one in Johnny McRae's bag. I doubt he still bags it. That was years ago. But yeah, I did some of the, like, not the high mounds, but some of the flatter mounds. Mm. And did I do a warship, like pretty much every warship I die, I do it with a sea, an ocean, and, you know, some kind of background, and maybe night and maybe day and maybe, you know, bright, whatever. But when you put it on that flatbed and you had a little bit more water built in, you know, you mix it up a little bit, it just created like a dulled out burst effect, you know, where mm-hmm. it wasn't quite as, didn't shoot out quite as far, and mm-hmm. got some pretty cool stuff out of that. So I may have to bring that back up.
Yeah, I haven't done a shaving cream dye in a while. I was looking through some of your work.
It was fun. Plus, I'm sorry.
No.
I was going to say it was fun. Plus, you know, I use Barbasol, so those discs smell great.
This is true. I was going through some of your stuff, and I saw one disc where you had a stencil of the forest, and it looked like kind of, I don't know if you did a shaving cream thing in the sky, but it looked like the sun was setting or an aurora borealis. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that would have been shaving cream.
Yeah.
You know, a flat bed, not a mound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you mentioned that your first and second discs were good. but the third and fourth weren't so good. Why was that?
Yeah. I didn't know my color wheel. I got a lot of brown, and it wasn't pretty. So, yeah, learned a lot from those first few mistakes right there. And so the Lord put me on that color wheel, and I was like, you just changed my life.
Do you have an artistic background at all?
Nah, hell no.
Would you consider yourself an artist?
Yeah, for sure. Man, yeah. I throw color now. I mean, that's what I do. I love it. I love playing in color. I think that's kind of why I do so many different mediums, because, you know, I don't like to just be, you know, squared into something. You know, I like to, you know, branch out and see what I can do, and, you know, see if I can throw color and it not turn brown, you know.
So with you doing so many different styles, do you think you have a signature style?
Well, I mean, from early on, I've been doing lollipop swirls. You know, back when I started doing them, you know, I burned about 15 discs trying to learn how. But once I got it down, it was golden from then on, you know. So, but back then, there was only a couple people doing lollipop swirls at all. And, you know, I was one of them. But, I mean, now, you know, they're springing up, you know, like cordwood. So,
yeah, it's still pretty difficult to do in master, because I've tried.
It's all about that timing, baby.
It is. What is your favorite die method to do?
I mean, it depends on the mood, you know. I started playing in Floetrol, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, a year ago, somewhere in there. And I mean, Floetrol just, I mean, yeah, it's so versatile. There's so much you can do with it, you know. You know, I play around a little bit with, you know, that sail stuff. There's one out there. But I mean, I'm more into just throwing the color around. You know, trying to get some different effects and some different shading. I love the blending of the colors. So either that, or, you know, them lollipop swirls, I've been doing them a long time. They're quite meditative, you know. Once you get in that flow, it's a good thing.
So what does disc dyeing mean to you, and why do you keep doing it?
I keep doing it because it's fun. I like it. Man, you know, as long as I like it, I'm going to keep doing it. I mean, playing in color's fun, and, you know, like I said, I don't have an art background. I mean, I couldn't cut a straight line with a pair of scissors, you know, if my life depended on it. But, you know, this just, I don't know. It came to me. It works, you know. So, I don't know.
Where do you get your inspiration to dye some of these discs?
I try to recreate a lot of my own, but in a different style. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing it a while, so... I look through my old pictures all the time. I mean, I did some amazing stuff early on. I mean, I shouldn't have been dying that well, you know. But, you know, now I know a whole lot more about, you know, dying and all the different mediums. And
where else do you draw your inspiration from? Or is it just whatever you feel like doing at the time?
I like to go back through a lot of my old dyes. I've been doing it a while, so, you know, I try to get that. I like to, you know, maybe had an idea and change it up, maybe put it in a different medium, see how it looks and stuff. But, I mean, shit, I'm like everybody else. I look online, you know. You know, I probably follow 50, 75 dyers, maybe more. I mean, there's a ton of people out there doing a lot of great dyes. So, you know, it may not be a total inspiration because, you know, I'm still going to do it in my style. But, you know, I may see a color combo or something that I like, or, you know, just even an idea of a dye, you know, I might change it up a little bit. So, yeah, I'm like everybody else. I, you know, I'm on that phone just searching, just looking.
So where do you see yourself or taking yourself with your dye next? Like, is there something that you want to experiment or try with that you haven't yet, or anything else?
Well, I think the one area I've struggled is glue beds. I mean, sometimes I'll get a glue bed that'll be popping, but most of the time they suck. And so, I don't know. I've reached out a few people about trying to figure out where my struggles are on glue, because that's one of the few that I haven't really been able to progress on my own. So, you know, I love some of the styles, some of the effects that you can get, you know, the presentation of a glue bed is, you know, unlike any other. So that would be one area that I'd really like to try to get a better hold on.
Yeah. The glue bed. So I've only really done maybe three methods of dyeing. The first thing that I ever started out with was the shaving cream, which I feel like a lot of the dyers in the early beginning started out with that. Then I did lotion, but I never got good results with lotion. Then I went to the glue bed, and I feel like once I got to the glue bed, I kind of leveled up on the bed game.
Yeah, if you can master it, it's a killer, man. I mean, it's just a lot. I've checked out your work. You do really good, really great work. I mean, especially you know, for a newbie, a COVID dyer.
Yes. The baby boomer, the COVID boomer dyer. Yes.
There you go.
Well, thanks for the kind words, but this podcast isn't about me. No, I'm just kidding.
It's about us, man. It's about dyes. That's all it's about.
Yeah. So you mentioned you use Prochemical and dye. Do you have any favorite colors from them?
I mean, it depends on the medium and, you know, what you're trying to get out of it. But I don't know. I like the Dark Dungeon. I a lot of my Floetrol beds or shaving cream beds or any of those, I'm going to put a spin around the edge, you know, to clean it up and give it a better presentation. I mean, it, you know, kind of frames it up or whatever. But, you know, that Dark Dungeon is beautiful when it comes out, especially if it's on a, you know, a blue or purple dye. I mean, it really enhances it because, you know, it's quite, not quite black. It's more of a bluish black. So, yeah, Dark Dungeon is number one. But I mean, the rest of them, I mean, they make great colors. I mean, everything, you know, like some colors in Floetrol are amazing. And then in acetone, they suck. So, you know, there again, it just depends on medium. That turquoise, though, in Floetrol, that's number one. But you got to watch it. Make sure you wear gloves. That stuff will not come off your hands.
So I feel like that you do everything. It's hard to narrow down on a specific method or topic to talk about. How about this? What's the hardest part of disc dyeing for you?
Staying in it, you know. I get a lot of commissions, and I have to cut the commissions off because, you know, I work 60 hours plus every week, you know, and I drive an hour to and from work. So, I mean, you know, that's the majority of my week right there. So, you know, it's hard when you're trying to do something for someone else and you don't get a really, you know, throw your own color. So I try to mix it up. I try to do my own, you know, as I'm working on some of the commission dyes, but that kind of helps keeps it going. But I the hardest part is just staying in it. You know, I've been doing it a long time. You know, I've burned out once or twice, you know, maybe not all the way, but you know, there's a little flicker still in there and it brought me back. So, you know, I go through periods like when I was hurt from work, man, I was throwing color like crazy once I got off them pain pills.
With doing all those commissions, once your hobby does become work, it's easy to lose that passion because it doesn't become fun anymore.
Yeah, because you're in the grind. You know, it's, like you said, it's not that passion part. It's in the grind.
Yeah. what's been keeping you... I know I asked this question before, but what's been keeping you into disc dyeing and, you know, not wanting to give up and keep doing it?
I mean, a lot of different things, but I mean, change, you know, like we've talked about, I'm versed in all mediums, playing all of them, you know, but you know, when you're learning a new medium and getting to play with it, it's a weird feeling, man. It just, it's serenity, you know, it just calms you, but you know, you have fun. And I mean, it's a lot of fun. That's what keeps me coming back. I love playing in color.
So do you like learning new techniques and dye methods?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, you know, that glue bed, I mean, it's got my goat right now, but I ain't going to let it beat me. I'm going to get it.
So we talked about the hardest part of disc dyeing. What is the easiest part of disc dyeing?
Throwing color. Throwing color. And, you know, I've been at a lot of events and stuff. So, you know, I try to keep an inventory of, you know, 15 or so. And then, you know, I put them in a few stores around. Dynamic Disc, Iron City, shout out. Y'all doing good work. Appreciate you repping the monkey. So, yeah, I mean, I get to play with a lot of other, you know, a lot of other color and stuff. And it's, I mean, it's fun. Playing in color's fun.
What fail stories do you have?
Well, over 5 years, you can imagine.
What are some of the memorable ones?
You know, losing a Floetrol bed on the way to the bathroom sink to wash it out, and the whole pan. Yeah. My carpet's multicolored now.
Oh boy.
But, yeah, I mean, again, like on the commissions, you know, I get busy doing a lot of things, but I always try to have, you know, four or five discs working. You know, if they're different mediums, you know, they're going to take different time, different stages and stuff. And I do, you know, I tend not to do just one thing to a disc. I tend to, you know, try to mix some stuff up. And, so I got a cat when I got hurt, and, you know, I was trying to do all these, you know, have all these projects working, but, you know, after I got hurt at work, I was off a couple months, and I got lonely, and I got a cat, and the cat likes to get on the dye bed, and, yeah, so she threw some color of her own, and it wasn't quite what I was looking for. So that, and, you know, maybe have too much going on at one time, and I've fallen asleep a time or two, and, you know, lost a disc to a bed.
I feel like you could start a new trend with cat dyes, where the cat does the dye.
Look at this thing right here. Hang on. I mean, I had a beautiful thing started and going, and then blue right in the middle of Zeus's face. So, well, luckily, that was not a commission.
Yeah. But, yeah. Cat dies. It would sell.
Yeah. I'm sure it would.
Yeah.
My ex-wife, we used to do tie dyes too. And, you know, we'd link them together and sell them or whatever. And, she did some, you know, the cat butt with cat's tail up in the air walking. I mean, it was a big thing, you know, a few years ago. But, I mean, we shipped those things all over the United States. It was crazy. People into cats, whatever.
Yeah. What discs do you like to dye? Like what plastics and or brands?
So yeah, on the plastics, you know, I love a good luster. It doesn't matter, you know, which one, you know, every, just like throwing discs, you know, every manufacturer makes some good discs to dye. You just got to know what you're looking for. So, you know, luster just gives it, you know, more of a shimmer and just a cool presentation, you know. But, you know, a lot of people come on here and they'll say K1, Castoplast, which, you know, out of the bed, that's A number one. That's the best shit ever. But that shit's going to fade on you quick. So, you know, I'm careful with my Castoplast dyes. You know, there's only certain mediums I use them on because they, you know, other than glow, they are pretty fast to fade. But, I never really dyed much ESP up until, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago. I got a lot of ESP and got it in, like, just not white, you know, Dyer's Delight. I got it in some colors. And, I mean, it takes color like a white disc. I've never seen anything like it. So, you know, I don't know about the fade factor on it. Kind of scares me a little bit when they're, you know, when the dyes come out that pretty and it's not a white disc to start with and you're getting full color out of it.
Yeah.
Something ain't right. So, yeah. But like I said, everybody makes good plastic, you know. Lucid, I think, is probably my number one, other than, you know, a glow will kind of mute a color, you know, a little bit more than a white. So, you know, that white just, you know, makes it pop.
Absolutely.
That Lucid will hold it. It probably holds dye just as well as any disc out there. So,
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Do you use heat when you dye?
Well, it depends on the medium, but yeah, yes. For sure.
That's exactly what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. I even heated up my acetone mixes for a while, you know, on my spins. But I don't know if I may have got them a little too warm. I'm not sure, but they were easy to bleed out. I couldn't hold the lines with them, like, you know, when they were just room temperature or whatever. So, but yeah, Floetrol beds, glue beds. I got a couple heat lamps. I'll throw some heat on them. I got a heat gun. I'll do, you know, some spreads on Floetrol beds with just the heat gun. You get a little bit different effect out of it than you would, say, a blow dryer or a compressor. You know, I mean, I got all the toys and gadgets, so probably not good enough to have them all, but, you know, I love playing with them. So yeah, definitely use heat.
Out of all those toys and gadgets, what is your most favorite accessory?
Favorite? That's a tough one. I guess it'd have to be the record player, you know, because I'm using it on almost every dot. You know, if it's not a lollipop spin or any other kind of spin, you know, I'm still going to frame up a Floetrol bed or a glue bed or anything like that. And, you know, a lot of times I might even, you know, put something on the underside, a little bonus spin, but that'll cost you an extra $5.
There you go. And I do believe spin dies are the finishing touch. And like you said, framing it
is a good
term for that. Yeah, what record player do you have?
I was going to say, these are pieces of art. They deserve to be framed up. I've got an old Technique direct drive that I got probably a week into starting dying discs, and I've had it the whole time. And I got it for $5 at the Goodwill, and it's been a winner for sure. I did buy her replacement the other day. Found a pretty cheap direct drive on Amazon, so I went ahead and snagged that. But I haven't fired it up or tested her yet. So, you know, it's got my Technique record player. It's, you know, it's an old turntable you could use for mixing, and it's got that, you know, about a 10-inch pan on it where you can set the record on it. You know, all them newer ones, they got that little hickey. I might need that spin jig rig you got designed up.
Yes.
I don't know if it'll work for that one or not.
Well, there's only one way to find out, and send me your address, and I will send you one for free.
Boom, done. You drive a hard bargain. I'm in.
Damn, I'm a bad salesman.
I'll trade you out a die for it. How about that?
Whatever. Your time to be on here is my payment. So, for your spin dyeing, what mixture do you have or use for the dye, and what do you use to apply the dye to the disc?
I do acetone and alcohol. You know, when I started, nobody really talked about denatured alcohol. So we used like corn alcohol, you know, like you'd get at the liquor store. As a matter of fact, that's where I got mine from. So, but yeah, I've just ventured off, mixed up a bunch of denatured alcohol, but I haven't used it yet. But I mean, primarily all my spins are acetone and, you know, Pro-Chem, occasionally a few little iodide poly colors, but do a lot of mixes of my own too, you know, try to come up with those monkey colors, you know?
Yeah. And what do you use to apply the dye to the disc?
Paintbrushes mostly. If I'm trying to do a symmetrical spin, I might use a Q-tip. I have started using them a little bit more, but, you know, like for the lollipops, you know, I definitely use a brush. You got to have a brush. You got to hit that thing consistently in the same spot with layers. You know, that's the only way you get your color. You know, a Q-tip or some kind of cotton swab applicator, and that'd be a little rough. You know, the paintbrush gives you a little flex in it. So,
interesting. Do you have any specific paintbrushes that you like to use?
Just gold Tacmon. Depending, you know, I vary on the size. I'm not like JL. I don't use those big ones. So I generally go from a two rounded, up to up to about a 4, realistically. I'll do a 5 or 6 or even an 8, you know, for a yellow. Because I can fade it, you know, into something else. So into a green or, you know, orange or whatever. So,
do you typically have your brushes pretty saturated with the dye, or do you kind of wring them out before you put it on?
Yeah, I dip, dab, dab. You got to make sure you don't want to have excess. That's how you're going to get bleeds. You know, that acetone, it'll bleed out, you know, if you get too much on there. So, yeah, definitely dip it and wipe a little bit off to, you know, that's why I say, like, on those lollipops or really even spin dyes, you got to get them layers on there because, you know, you're not trying to put all the color on at one time. You know, you're trying to get it in layers. That's how you build that color and that color depth, you know, so.
For your lollipop spins, what is your method to get into that rhythm to get online every time?
Like when I first started out, I would use a count. You know, usually it was 1/1,000. That was it. But I don't know. Over time, I don't count as much anymore. You know, you can do a tight, you know, real bright, vivid lollipop, or you can do one a little more loose, you know, with a, you know, a little color spray. So it, you know, just it depends on, you know, what kind of color you're trying to put down. I don't like any dye to be the same. Everything look a little different. I may only be the one to see it, but you know, you know what I'm saying.
I'm getting the vibe that you don't like same stuff and you are like everything to be different. Like you're the jack of all, master of none. But you are a master of a lot.
Yeah,
so
100. I don't know about that, but I mean, I can throw color pretty good. So
yeah, but that's awesome that you tried and do all those different techniques. Cause it's fun to learn, and two, it expands your horizons and seeing what works and what doesn't work, and even combining some different methods.
Yeah, and I do a lot of that. You know, I just mark off a circle, you know, in the center of the disc, you know, 6 inch or 7, whatever, you know, do some kind of bed in there. And then I might do a lollipop swirl around the outside. Like, I did some, pretty wicked, dark side of the moon dice, and I did all of them a little different, you know, but a lot of them I did, you know, have, you know, more of just the contrast with the dark and then the brightness of the full rainbow, and then, you know, added a swirl around the edges and stuff. So I think I still got one at Par on Par Plastics. He's got a little dyers section on his webpage. So I think there's one still up there on that side. Shout out, B. Appreciate you, B. You're doing good work.
Awesome. So you said you've done a lot of commissions. Has there been any weird or notable commissions that you've done that you can talk about?
Yeah. I guess I hadn't been dying too long, and I already had a silhouette machine, so I could do stencils, and I'm starting to pop out a lot of stencils. And at that time, the dick dice were going around, just bunch of dicks on a disc, and you know, I had a couple people hit me up, and I was like, nah, I think I'm gonna pass on them dick dice.
Yeah. I did one, and I can show you privately what I did.
Cool.
You're gonna get a dick in your inbox.
That's the first time any man's ever told me that. Thanks, Dave.
Well, hopefully it's the last, maybe.
And it will be.
So how did you start promoting your work, and what have you found to be the most successful with that?
Local. I mean, when I started, I didn't have anything, any social media going on. I had my personal pages or whatever, but you know, I didn't really know how it was going to turn out. You know, I got the logo you see right there, Monkey Grip Dice. I got the logo early on. A buddy of mine did that, found a monkey, and I said, put some hair on him and a hat, and I said, that's me, I am the monkey. So, but you know, I dyed a lot of shit for free. You know, hey, you want me to dye that when I'm starting out? Try something out. If it don't work out, you can't be mad. If you like it, throw me some, you know, throw me some change. But if you don't, sorry about your disc. So, you know, just word of mouth. And like I said, I hit pretty early, you know. I was on to something, you know. It was just shaving cream early on, but, you know, I mean, the shit still looked good. And, you know, I did a lot of combo dyes with shaving cream centers and, you know, spins on the outside, and, you know, that set it off. And, it looked pretty good. So, I've got some, about an hour from here, we've got a pretty good, big-sized disc golf community, Birmingham, Alabama, you know, They've got quite a few folks out there, and I've befriended a few that you know, set up and sold discs and stuff. And so I'd set up at a lot of their tournaments and just kind of branched out from there. And then I started the Instagram and the Facebook, and that was really the two only socials I got on. But we had a web page for a while. But like I said, you know, we used to, with my ex-wife, we used to do a lot of tie-dyes and stuff. Like, some of her tie-dye work there, which, if I can ever find some time, I think I might give that a try too. So this disc dye and throwing color worked out pretty good. I think I can do it on some cotton as well as I can on some plastic.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what you come up with for textile stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips or tricks that you give people who would want to vend at these events?
I mean, be you. You know, people are going to want to come talk to you as much as they are to, you know, to buy your stuff. You know, I carry a lot. I branched out. I merchandise. You know, I sell as many hats as I do discs, you know, disc dyes. But, you know, you can have a good representation of your work, and a lot of people say, well, you know, can you dye that on my disc? You know, what if I, you know, ship a disc to you? Can you put that or something like that on there? So, yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, early on, that's where a lot of the commission's from, and just word of mouth. And, you know, it kind of grew from there. You know, I don't have the biggest Instagram or Facebook following, but it's pretty solid. I mean, I ship discs all over the United States. So, you know, it depends on how much time I got and, you know, how many dyes I can get done. So, you know.
So if one is looking to vend at an event or tournament, how would they get their foot in the door to actually go there?
You got to be cool about it, you know. The way I did it, you know, I'm a fairly sociable, outgoing person. So I got to know, you know, a lot of people that were TDN events and stuff. And, you know, I would say, hey, can I come set up? You know, most of the time these TDs want vendors to set up because it makes their tournament look better. You know, most of the time it's going to be disc sales and not, you know, just dyes and hats and tie dye shirts and stuff. But, you know, they want it. It helps them. I mean, it gets people excited about their tournaments for the next year and stuff. So, you know, I would generally, you know, some of them would want appearance fees or, you know, setup fees. But usually, you know, if you sponsor a hole or, you know, I donate CTPs all the time, you know, maybe a hat, maybe a disc, maybe a shirt, you know, I got all kinds of stuff. Could be some koozies, I mean, you know, but you're just cool about it. You know, most of us aren't here to, you know, this ain't our day job. This ain't our only job. You know, we're just here, you know, that little side scratch is nice to have, but you know what? I'm more about just throwing color, you know. I love the opportunity, you know. So yeah, just be cool and, you know, talk to a TD or, you know, get to know some vendors or something and set up with them, you know. Most of the time people are pretty open and receptive, you know, as long as you end a D-bag.
I mean, that's a pretty good rule for life in general.
There you go. Life lessons from the monkey.
Yes. How many events did you vend at last year, and how many are you looking to vend at this year?
You know, I got a little banged up, so I was out of commission a little bit for the end of the year, so I didn't sign up as quite as much. But, I mean, I probably still vended probably 15, 20 events. You know, some of them might be, you know, our local league, our tag rounds. Even before we had a league, we'd have tag rounds. You know, if I had some, you know, plastic dyed or, you know, a new batch of hats or something, you know, I'd throw it out there and see if anybody wanted to snatch it up.
How did you come up with your Die business name.
Monkey Grip Dies. I am the monkey. When I started playing disc golf, I played with a group of some pretty hardcore dudes. You know, they nothing came easy. You know what I'm saying? Everybody picked on each other, and I had such a grip lock. It wasn't even a grip lock anymore. It was so bad they called it a monkey grip. Because I would chuck them things 90 degrees sometimes off to the right on that backhand. And they nicknamed me Monkey Grip Dies, and my local disc golf community, a lot of people knew me as the monkey before there was Monkey Grip Dies, because that was one of my nicknames. It morphed into that. Buddy, he's like, when we were talking about trying to come up with names, he's like, you need to be Monkey Grip Dies. I said, you are right. Because it was going to be like Wilson Dies, or I don't even know what the other names were. But once Monkey Grip came out, that was it. Boom. Done.
Well, I hope you don't monkey grip your discs as much nowadays.
Well, we'll see when I get back out there.
Yes.
The few I've thrown, there's still a touch of monkey in me for sure. But with that grip, most of them are slipping now.
Right on. Do you have any tips or tricks that you would like to give either to beginner disc dyers or experienced dyers?
To all of them. You got to love it to do it, If you don't love it, don't do it, I've forced myself, working on commission dyes or whatever, and, turned out a product that I wasn't fully satisfied with, because I really wasn't loving the process, you just got to love it. You got to love it to do it. Don't get caught up in it. We're just dying discs, that's all we do. So,
yeah, it's just pieces of plastic with color.
There it is. Let me throw a little color in your bag.
If you had to start just dying over, is there anything that you do differently knowing what you know now?
Probably wouldn't do it. This hobby that was supposed to make me a little side scratch, it gets expensive. Just like when your friends, first introduce you to disc golf. Hey man, it's fun. It's free. You just got to get a couple discs. That's it. And yeah. Shit, hundreds of discs later in that first 6 months, you're like, damn, I thought this shit was free, but it ain't. Same way with dying, I use a lot of different mediums, so I still have a lot of the same first jars of dye I bought over 5 years ago, But when you start using those certain colors pretty heavy, those are the ones that you do have to re-up on. And, that shit's gone up a lot since when I first started. It was a lot cheaper. Like, I dye poly black. I don't know what the hell's going on with them. I mean, it's crazy. You can't find it for, under $6 for a damn 13-ounce or 13-gram. It's stupid. So you can spend a lot of money in it, but you can make a little too. If you do it right.
It's not necessarily the business to become a millionaire on.
No, like you said, it's tough, man. Like you said, respect to dudes like Limpa and Daddy Mac. I mean, they're making a push of it, I mean, there's other dyers out there too. You've had a couple on your podcast. There's several people that are doing this as their vocation. It's crazy. So maybe if I didn't work 60 plus hours a week, I could spend a little more time on it and make it my vocation. But
the most expensive thing is time.
True that. And that's another thing. When you're pricing your disc, don't devalue your time. A lot of artists do. You got to kind of sell where the market's at. You can't really go above what your market's willing to pay, and that varies from place to place. But, most of these dyes, the cost of the dye itself is not that much. The medium might be a little bit more, and then, vinyl, whatever, if you got a stencil or whatever. But, your time, man, it's got to be worth something.
I still believe that a lot of the dyers underprice their discs a lot, and the margins are very, very small. People don't account for the time it takes to dye it and everything else.
But like, you know, I started selling discs, I think $20 or something, you know. I mean, it was just a couple bucks to throw a die on. Of course, you know, discs back then were probably, you know, $13 for, you know, high-end premium. But, you know, it costs money.
How much do you typically sell a dyed disc for?
My market's really not going to allow more than $35, $40 for a disc. If it has to be something, you know, so outstanding that I'd have to put so much time in it, it's not really worth it to try to get that much more out of it. You know, certain mediums, you know, it doesn't take long to dye a disc, you know. Part of what they're getting, you know, is my years, my knowledge, my experience, the time I put in, you know, over the years doing this thing, you know, kind of honing in my little craft. So, you know, definitely that's got to be a factor, you know.
All right. So now the next section is we're going to get to know Paul more on a personal level. The first
that's scary
set of questions that I have is favorite fave. What is your favorite band or song?
That's a tough one, man. Y'all check out my station on Pandora, DG Ultramix. Just change your lives. It's the best music ever. It has everything except country. No country on there, sorry. But I mean, I listen to, you know, a lot of punk from when I was growing up. I'm an older fella myself, you know, so a lot of that early 80s, 90s punk. I mean, yeah, I'm all about some of that hard, you know, hard metal. And I mean, shit, I listen to it all. Like a lot, probably one of my favorites right now is Hippie Sabotage. You know, I like a lot of mood music, you know. If it's got a good vibe to it, I'm down for it, you know.
I'm going to have to check out that Pandora station of yours.
DG Ultramix. D, capital D, capital G. I'll send you a link later.
All right. Well, for anybody else that wants to, just go to there and you'll find it. All right. What is your favorite food?
All of it. I like it all, except vegetables.
Well, vegetables can be good if there's a lot of butter and salt.
Yeah, I guess. People say that, but I'm still waiting. Corn on the cob's all right. That's about where to land. Now, meat, man, any kind of meat, shit. I mean, you can't beat a damn good cheeseburger. You know, you got a cheeseburger with some decent bread and you throw a little egg on there. Man, you got yourself something right there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love meat as well. And with the keto diet that I'm on, it's basically just meat and fat.
Yeah.
What is your favorite beverage?
Sprite. Coffee. That's my, you know, pretty much through every day. Coffee all the way up till, you know, late afternoon we drink. At work, I couldn't tell you how many pots of coffee we go through. Probably 15 or 20 a day. It's crazy. And then, yeah, you know, a little Sprite. I love Sprite.
There you go. So besides disc golf and disc dying, what other hobbies do you have?
None. I work. Work and this take up all my time. I mean, that's pretty much it. I've done a lot of things, you know, over the years, but it seems like I get addicted to something for about 7 to 10 years, and then I bounce to something else. But you know, we ain't quite there and dying yet, but you know, I've been playing that long, but I still love it. I mean, the community of disc golf is just, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, you know.
So what did you do before disc golf and disc dying?
Bowling. I was a pretty good bowler. I've shot in dart leagues. I was pretty good at that, and you know, bowling, and you know, I like a lot of something to keep me occupied, and I try to do it pretty well. Threw darts for a while. Love darts. Maybe one day I'll challenge Simon a little darts pool and disc golf. He'll probably whoop me in all of them, but still be fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And speaking of professional players, the next section is dream date. If you had to pick one professional disc golfer to play around with and hang out with, who would it be and why?
That's a good question. I've thought about that on, you know, listening to your other podcast, because I got to play with Nico. He's pretty cool. He's really the only touring pro that I played with, but growing up, I spent a lot of time in Texas, and I got to play with a lot of people out there. I saw a real young Paige Pierce out there at Lake Louisville, I guess outside of Plano, Texas. So, but I mean, it wouldn't have to be one person though. It'd have to be the Jomez crew, you know, Big Sexy Barry. I mean, it says it all right there. You got a little diverse group right there that would just be, you know, awesome. So that's definitely who my answer would be.
All right. If you had to pick three discs to use on any course for the rest of your life, what would those discs be and why?
Number one, a river. I've thrown a river ever since I started, and depending on the plastic, it's different discs. I mean, I love a river. You know, you take somebody that's just starting out or somebody that's been playing forever, and if they throw it right, I mean, a river's got one of the prettiest flights out there. And you can launch them too. Not me, but, you know, maybe you. or others, but so definitely be river would have to be in the mix. The old Pro V Cobra, you know, I've been playing a while. I throw some of that old stuff, but the V Cobra in that Pro plastic is one of the glidiest, straightest, just beautiful mid ranges I've ever seen. And then putter, I don't know. I recently switched, I guess, to EV7 over the last couple of years, so still feeling them out. Really like that new Telos. But if I could only have one for the rest of my life, it'd probably have to be that EMAC Judge. You know, it's that microbeat on that thing changed it up quite a bit. It's a real good feeling putter.
Interesting. So you like beaded putters?
Eh.
The Telos is not. It's my first putter that's not beaded, so I'm trying to. I kind of like the feel of it. It's a little different, so you know. I have a tendency to monkey grip even in my putt sometimes, so you know, hang on a little long. So, I'm trying to get rid of that bead, see if that makes a difference.
So grade three discs. What do you have, like a mixed bag or specific brand of discs?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody makes good plastic. Every manufacturer out there makes good plastic, except maybe Franklin. But I hear they're making a premium plastic now too. So, mixed bag is where it's at. I mean, if somebody ain't paying you, why are you throwing all their shit? You know, everybody makes good plastic. Go find you some.
No.
You know, find out what fits you. That's what I've tried to do over the years.
I agree. Except I feel like I'm hypocrite because I only throw MVP/Axiom. But before that,
Gyronauts.
Yes.
Hey,
I liked them before they were cool.
I mean, I remember, you know, back in their early days, you know, my early days of throwing, everybody was freaking out. Like, what the hell is that? You know, it's supposed to, you know, like rotate faster and go farther. And I was like, all right, damn. But I mean, it, you know, felt through like any other plastic when I threw it. So like I said, everybody makes good plastic.
Yeah. I don't know how much the gyro effect really works, but I like the company in general. But anywho.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty solid.
Yeah. The perfect hole. What has been your favorite disc golf course that you've played and or hole?
That is a tough one. You know, I've been playing over 10 years, 13 years or so, I guess. And when I started, you know, we were traveling around and, I got to play over 18 states and I played over 325 courses. I used to track it on DG Course Review. You know, that's long before U-Disc was ever even thought of. So, but I mean, I've played so many and a lot of them run together. I got to play a lot of the, you know, top courses in the country. All throughout the southern part, you know, a lot of people talk about Idlewild, but I mean, there was a course probably 15 minutes from there, Lincoln Bicentennial Park or something. And they had a fun course. But I'd say probably my favorite was, Trees House, outside of Branson, Missouri. It used to be a 9-hole ball golf course and they converted it to a disc golf course. and it's had a little elevation and a little open, little trees and a little OB and good little mix. And, you know, there's a pretty good wind. A couple times I played it, and it was fun. That's what I like. Just a good, fun course that has a lot of mix, you know, a lot of variety. I mean, everybody gets bored shooting at the same old stuff, you know, so.
Yes. Again, I feel like you like the variety and diversity in things.
Dang, that seems to be a trend, doesn't it? I've never noticed that.
it's not a bad thing. So, all right. So I hope you learned something from Paul and got to know him a little bit more on a personal level. And he will be raffling off a disc. So when this podcast gets released, the raffle will go live and you can buy. Let me start this whole segment over because I was mumbling.
Spit it out, Dave. Rock on, Dave.
Yes.
Hey, right. So before you start.
Yeah.
If I'm ever up that way, I want to hit you up. I'd like to, you know, throw around with you and vice versa. If you're ever down here, you know, around Alabama, holler.
Absolutely.
I can show you a lot of good courses, man.
Absolutely. There's a lot of dyers in this area too. So
yeah, I notice that. I keep up. Try to anyway.
Yes.
That's my only pro sponsored athlete is from Wisconsin.
Really?
Eau Claire. No. So she moved. Lindsay Fish.
Okay.
You know Lindsay? She's not like a top elite pro tour, but she's giving it a full fledged this year. She's coming up. She's pretty solid. Two lakes, twin lakes.
Okay.
Red lakes. Something. Something lakes. Lake Ponta. I don't know. Y'all got crazy names up there. I don't know.
yes. A lot of them were derived from Native American terms. So good luck sounding those out.
And that's what Lindsay is. She's Native American. So.
Nice.
She's a beautiful human being. That's why I sponsored her.
So if you want to help support him and his dying habits, he will be raffling off a disc. So when this podcast gets released, you will be able to enter the raffle for $1 to get a chance to win this amazing disc, which will be on the Dyers Guild website. So if you head to dyersguild.co/raffle is where you will find it. And the raffle will be live for 2 weeks. So 100% of the proceeds will go to Paul. And again, it'll help support him and his habits. So yes, Paul, I greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to be on this podcast. And I hope you feel better and that you can actually get back out onto the course sooner rather than later and keep laying down those awesome colors.
Appreciate that day. Thanks for having me on, man. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So, till next time, guys, we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Peace.